Young and Indigenous Podcast is an outlet for people to know about Indigenous knowledge, storytelling, and history. Through our youthful journeys as Indigenous people, young people and elders share their experiences with us. Without them, we wouldn't be able to do this.
Come listen to Plants, a podcast series featuring many different plant knowledge keepers with diverse perspectives and plant philosophies. A series brought to you by Children of the Setting Sun Productions and Cultural Survival Youth Fellow Opportunities.
Hello, welcome to Young and Indigenous Podcast. My name is Free Borsi. I'm here on the Plant Series podcast brought to you by Cultural Survival and Children of the Setting Sun Productions. Today, we're sitting down with one of the knowledge keepers from the Lummi Nation, Sadie Olson.
Aitsquail, Kwasamut Sinisnat, Chauchlumisin, Utsanichsin. Suitsin Ohiluk, Quinis Ashla Atiuk Ayas, Nukchisin Makwalia, Quinis Enatachel, Nestli Quinis Qual, Aquaquinal Squal, Outsin Chit Chauchlumichasin, E Utatasin Quinis Twinauk. Hello, good day. My traditional name is Kwasamut, and my English name is Sadie Olson. My father is Sahanat Pasmin, and his English name is Troy Olson. My mother is Kusamat, and her English name is Shirley Williams. I am from the Lummi Nation. I am from Kwajalleep, which is part of the Hwasanich Nation on Vancouver Island. Thank you all for coming today. I just wanted to say a few words. I do not know the Lummi language, and I am still learning how to speak it. I'm excited to be talking with this podcast today because I'm really interested in native plants, and it's a deep passion of mine, and it helps guide the work that I do through my education. And I think that salmon and native plants are really deeply intertwined, and our ecosystem is really deeply intertwined. And so when we connect back to our ecosystem and our traditional homelands, we will become healthier as a people because our culture is out of the land, our language is from the land, and our food is our medicine, and our water is life. So we have a really beautiful ecosystem. And I think that using education and legislation as a way to protect our environment and to educate each other about our strengths or things of that sort. I think that's how we're gonna protect what we love. I'm an activist through various things that I like to do with my life, just following with the passions that I have for native plants and my passion for Indigenous public health and preserving our environment. I think that will do us best for protecting our health as Native peoples. I know that, like I said, our elders have said food is medicine. So I've been working on a resolution with the tribal youth delegates from the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board to work on a healthy food resolution. And that's something that I'm actively trying to work out and I've been doing for 2 years. I do environmental work through White Swan Environmental, through our Native-led nonprofit. And we do community engagement, and we also do various projects where we can help educate people about how important our environment is to us, how important our salmon is to us. Since my interest is in native plants, I support people learning about native plants and just try to encourage like the connections within our community, whether they're people to people or people to place. I think that it's really important because that's our culture, that's our sovereignty, that's what we've been gifted by the Creator, so it's our inherent right and our acquired right. We should definitely be going out into our environment and learning the medicines that we have been given by our elders and ancestors and the creator, and then also as students and people who are responsible for this land, and we are the voices for the plants and the animals and the creatures of the deep and of the sky and all of the living resources that we have around us, then we should really use our voice to do good things, whether that's through our education or through legislation or a mixture of the both, which is kind of what I like to do. I like to practice interdisciplinary learning and mixing a lot of my personal and professional interests. So my future goals are to be an Indigenous lawyer, and I also want to be a language keeper. So I just have recently been completing my Bachelor's of Science, Native Environmental Science degree out of Northwest Indian College. And I was in the interdisciplinary concentration option, and I did my capstone on salmon habitat and climate change. So that was the topic that I chose because my familial relationship with salmon and the reef net is really important. And that's my family and I go through our nonprofit work is by elevating the importance of the salmon and the salmon people. And at the same time, I'm also interested in like learning the language. So Wiklami Chasin is a very specific language dialect to Wiklami Nation. And it's a portion of like Hokumelem and Lushootseed, but it's like very specific to this territory, mostly Hokumelem. And then Tsinchathan is what my relatives speak in Ksanich. And they speak majority Hokumelem. And it sounds a lot like Wiklami Chasin, but they're two separate languages. So I want to go to University of Victoria for my master's degree, and I want to go through the Indigenous Law program, and then I want to focus on the Indigenous Law in Tsinchathan, and then come back to Lummi and learn specifically Wiklami Chasin. But I want to help support my relatives in Saanich to learn and preserve their language for future generations.
The Winona LaDuke quote where she says, it's funny how when you fight for clean drinking water, it makes you an environmental activist, but when you're polluting that water, it doesn't make you an environmental terrorist. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's kind of like what you're saying with like our innate responsibilities as like human beings of this land, you know, it's like what is seen as like activism is, like you put it, a way of life and a responsibility that that is innate with you. It's not like you're developing your life around it for a status quo or for anything like that, but rather it's like your inherent right and responsibility.
For my capstone project, my final results were based on communities of practice and like what people are feeling like they learned about salmon and then how to support salmon people. And then the other part of it was actually working with Lummi Natural Resources to get data and seeing a visual representation of what the salmon population or salmon abundance is looking like. So there was like the two options, you know, like there's the data focused one and then there's the people focused one where it's harder to get that sort of information.
So you work with natural resources, and you're currently an intern at the Lummi Natural Resources Department. And you shared a little bit about the work that you are doing. What work would you like to what work would you like to be doing in the future?
I'd like to do more work about salmon habitat restoration. And for me, that's a lot of what's happening out in the Salish Sea and, you know, managing tanker traffic, managing the types of vehicles that are not our traditional tlay or snook wolf, and, you know, having those sounds that impact our relatives of the deep and their ability to get salmon, but also our salmon survival. I think that would be interesting for me to research more of. And then that's way out in the saltwater. So then coming up towards Mount Baker and learning about the types of plants that are in the area, because salmon are really interesting species that follow the scents. And so they genetically understand like the smell of things and continue to follow that same scent. And so we had ceremonies to do, like the first salmon ceremony, and is basically honoring the salmon. And when we do those ceremonies and we present an offering, it allows the salmon to kind of like get that smell back. But there's a lot of native plants that have those really strong fragrances of our plant medicines. And I think that we should do more work to restore the plant medicines and to connect youth to the plants in the area. So that was the other topic, because for my capstone, I did salmon focused for my bachelor's degree. And then for my master's, I want to do salmon habitat and then focus on that. And then for my PhD, I want to do the focus on climate change and how that relates to salmon. So I don't have that completed yet, but I do think that for my master's degree or my next degree, I want to focus more on salmon habitat and try to implement more projects or programs or partnerships to contribute to those ideas of native plant restoration.
In regards to salmon habitat and plants, something that's often overlooked is the importance of log jams on a river. And in a Western sense, historically, log jams were seen as obstructs, and to like get rid of them or annihilate these natural formations, it was seen as progress. But could you speak to the importance of log jams for salmon?
What I learned about log jams and how they relate to salmon habitat is that there's various life stages. So there's different life stages of a salmon. There's the egg, and then it turns into like a yearling or a smolt. And then it gets, that's like a juvenile salmon. And then it will continue growing, and then it will kind of like move down river. And then when they're like coming back from the saltwater, they come back up the river into the stream that they were born in, their natal stream, to lay their eggs. But while they're still going up the stream, they're growing, and even they need these little pools to basically teach them how to swim. And that's really important for their survival, because when they're too rapidly move down or up the river, or down the river, and there's not any place for them to rest. That might have been confusing, but they will not survive. They're like in their child stage of life, and you can't log jams do for salmon and baby salmon. is it helps give them that little rest period where the water is a little bit more stagnant and it's not so rapid, because a river is like a moving body of water and it's flowing downstream. So those stagnant pools allow the salmon to grow.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing, you know, that insight with our audience. I think that speaks volumes on the selflessness that plants have, you know, even after they're deemed dead. You know, the logs were once living trees, but even after death, you know, they continue to give. And I think it's really important for our audience to have that insight. You know, could you share about the work that you're doing with White Swan Environmental at the school system with plants, or just what White Swan Environmental is doing in general with plants?
White Swan Environmental has helped to co-found a school, a charter school, and it's called Whatcom Intergenerational High School. So my dad and I were on the co-founding board, and then my mom is the co-founder with our partner, and we helped to implement a lot of the indigenous elements into that school during the like curation process of like, what is the school going to look like and how will it impact the community, how will their education impact the youth. And we took a long time to figure that out, to think about that carefully and to set that up. And it's still in its pilot years, so it's not like we can confirm the success or whether or not it's sinking. It's at this like level where it's, you know, growing, and it's not completely stable yet because it's in its like infantile years. But it's the type of model that we want to use for our longhouse restoration. So White Swan Environmental's mission is to support community healing for the natural, cultural, historical, and ecological restoration to the Salish Sea, for seventh generation sustainability as a measure of ecological health protection for all. And our mission is, we are the vision keepers for seven longhouses in the San Juan Islands and seven longhouses in the Gulf Islands, for a K through PhD, mountain to sea, reef to reef, Coast Salish Tribal Heritage Field Institute. And that's something our ancestors used to have. It wasn't necessarily like a school, but it was like where we lived our way of life. And as we talked about before, being an activist is not intentional necessarily. It's just a way of life and a way of living your life. And same with being a student. You just live your life and hope for the best. The work that we're doing with Whatcom Intergenerational High School with the youth about plants, mm-hmm. is we're working on the 13 Moon curriculum. And so the kids get to do their own research on who they are and where they come from. And that's a very diverse population, because that was the intention with the school, was for it to be another educational opportunity for people to go to school and just be free to be themselves and learn about what they're interested in, but also be grounded in First Peoples principles of learning and intergenerational learning, and to also be place-based. So for them to learn critical literacy, how to read, how to write, but also what that means in the real world and vice versa. That's really important. And then phenomena-based learning is about what they're interested in. So they were given this time to create pages about their 13 Moons calendar and to look at their own identity of who I am. And that includes, you know, like, where I come from is, what types of foods did your people eat? What kind of art projects did your people like to do? What are some major historical events, maybe, if that's what you're interested in, or maybe what type of, like, what do the seasons look like in your territory, because every ecosystem is different. And so it kind of gives them that, like, look into that phrase that was really important to Uncle Bill. It's really important to remember who you are and where you come from. And he would say that every time he did any speech or any discussion topic. He wanted us to remember how important it is for us to know who we are and where we come from. And that's why we want our longhouses back, is because we know we're saltwater salmon people and we come from the San Juan Islands, and our elders and our ancestors lived out there. And so that's who we are and where we come from. And it's really important for us to allow other people to have that insight. Maybe it will help them be more excited to support Indigenous peoples, knowing who we are and where we come from, and like connecting back to our places. Or maybe it will just provide them like empathy and insight and like a perspective, because it actually allows them to have an identity. So that's kind of what we're hoping for. But we also get to do these really fun field trips with their science program and their science teacher, Cam Kolk. And he's actually the STEM teacher. There's a possibility that there's another science teacher. But he works really closely with White Swan Environmental, and we get to go out into the, some of our traditional locations, like Birch Bay, and we get to go with Elder Bill John, and he would speak the language and help us to identify, you know, clams in the area or like trees in the language, and giving them the opportunity to do those types of opportunities with our elders. So it's almost like a small insight into our worldview and how important it is to be connected to our elders as Indigenous peoples.
White Swan Environmental has an interesting tool available on their website, the ecological mapping process. Could you share about that tool and why it exists?
Yeah, so one of our projects that we've been working on has been really spearheaded by my mother, Shirley Williams, and she is helping to work with MIT and Immerse, which is the multidisciplinary, cross-cultural, and transboundary community of practice dedicated to long-term ecological research in the Salish Sea bioregion. So Immerse and White Swan Environmental and other partners have been connecting, and we got a MIT grant and created a prototype of the Digital Ecocultural Mapping Project. And so it has an option where there's like a map, and you can click on your island or your reservation or your hometown. And so the prototype currently covers either Salt Spring or Galeano Island. You'd have to go look and see, but it has concentric circles, which was really important to our people as Tlactamish people, survivors of the flood. And it, you can look at, you know, plants, land plants, sea plants, you can look at marine mammals, land mammals, insects, and if you click on those things, then it will bring you into a really interesting circular catalog about the types of creatures that exist under that name. And once you click a specific species, then a box will show up and it will have information, it'll have the picture, it will have the scientific name, you could have traditional names, and then there's even a space for videos, and you can share like how this plant was used, traditionally, or it's really supposed to be like an ethnobotany like sort of situation where you can learn more about the plant or the species as it is, and it's not just one type of species. There's multiple types of species that exist in our microclimates, micro environments. So that's why it's such an interesting place here, because not one island is the same, or one, if you go up to the mountains, you're gonna have a different ecosystem than if you live down at sea level. And all of the different areas in between will have different ecosystems because we live at different elevations and there's different changes to the climate and the air pressure and the water, and that's why they're called microclimates.
Could you give us some examples of how plants were used traditionally in these in this territory?
Yeah, so that leads into another project area of White Swan Environmental, which is the communities of practice. And I've personally learned how to host the Native Plants Interest Group, and the other one was the Next Gen, which is the one we're currently getting more cohorts developed around. But the Native Plants Interest Group was where I learned some of the plant knowledge, because before that it had just been an interest to me. And so when you create a community of practice, you're bringing people across boundaries and across, whether those are like geographical boundaries or political boundaries or trans boundaries, and gathering about one specific practice that you share. And so the first one was of our late chief, our late CM, Salik, and it was the Native Plants Interest Group, and he talked about a lot of really important topics, and then he passed away shortly after that, so we ended up not sharing the video, because you're not supposed to share videos or pictures in our culture until after a year from their passing. So we held on to those. And then half of the video got corrupted, and it's just like him, because he would always say, oh, is your mind getting lazy if you can't remember specifically what he's saying? But he shared in the language, and he said, Seaflin, it's a slang elk, which is our food is our medicine. He continued on and mentioned like various types of plants. So there's like cedar, our chapai, which was used for different things, like mahoy, which is the cedar basket, or the spacha, which is our watertight baskets, which is how we would have boiled water, our slapat, which is the clam baskets, and you make those out of like cedar branches, and they're for allowing the water to be released from the clams so that you can gather pre-colonial times, or in our older days, I guess. And he talked about nettles, tuch, which is really good for helping with inflammation. And he talked about some of our like water plants. I really liked that video. And then the second episode that we did was with Grandma Sasayatha, and my computer crashed when we did that one, because it was a hybrid thing. It was like during COVID, so none of us were allowed to gather, but we were trying to do this hybrid instead of in person. And I was really grateful to have my elders like engage, because I didn't want this knowledge to be lost, especially since they were our elders. They're our elders. She talked about soap berries, and you could use soap berries to support removing cataracts from your eyes. She would talk about marsh tea, Labrador tea, and those are from the bogs, and if you take that, it helps to like flush your system out. There's a lot of really great examples that they shared, you know, like the trailing blackberries and the wild strawberries, and there's wild onions. I'm kind of like blending what they both said, but those foods have a really dense nutrient source, or nutrient count. And that's why there are medicines. And if you look at what they're saying, their traditional knowledge and what they've learned from their elders, and then you compare that to Western science. I took a class with, because of my interdisciplinary interests, I took a class with Western, and they talked to me about the Pacific silverback. And so that was one example of a native plant. And so if you have a native, or that native plant has to grow at one specific elevation, people would build terraces out of rocks, and then they would put dirt on top of them to build out the elevation at that one specific level, because if you were 5 meters too high or 5 meters too low, the plant just wouldn't survive. So you had to have it at one specific elevation. And these plants were best at, you know, a specific time of the year and a specific time of the day. And that's when the elders would go out and harvest this plant. Then they did a study and they tried to pick it early, to harvest it early. And then they did all of their research and found that it had not as much macronutrients, or like the things that our body absorbs. It doesn't have as much as it does once you harvest it specifically at the time that the elders were saying. Or if you got it too late, then it wouldn't have the amount of nutrients. So the time that we were harvesting it and the time that the elders say it's time to go and do this thing is when our plants have the best nutrients. And that's why it's really important for us to listen to our elders, because it's not made up. They're definitely passed down this knowledge and given these teachings and trying to share them with us so that we can learn them and get the most nutrients that we can.
A couple of the plants that really resonate with you. I know you talked about eelgrass earlier. Maybe you could speak to the importance of eelgrass and all of the benefits it has for our ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, eelgrass, this is just a personal interest. I learned it, I think, in a book or something. Eelgrass produces 2.5 times the amount of oxygen than a tree. So when we have, that's like 1 square foot of eelgrass. And so our entire waterways is made of this beautiful seaweed, and it's like this really green, long, flat strand of fibers. It flows around, and when the tide is out, it's like flat on the ground. But then when the tide is up, it like flows through the water, like, because it's a seaweed. When we were kids, we used to just run around and swim in it, play in it all day. That's just what we did. And then you can also like take it and separate it, and it has these little fibers. But then to grow up and learn that it produced 2.5 times the amount of oxygen as a tree, it just made me really appreciate it more and think about how much it does for us as people and for the salmon and for the crabs that like to crawl around in there. Another plant that I mentioned was cedar. Like I said, I used to go cedar harvesting with Uncle Bill, Sam Salik, and my father, Sahanat Pasmin. A lot of our relatives, like my Auntie Tracy, I've gone with my Uncle Richard, Hutchiquilton. We would practice that really high in the mountains, and Uncle Bill would bring us to the best like locations, and him and my dad would have these like excursions where they'd just go out for days and harvest because they like to weave hats, and my dad got into weaving capes. We would just have rolls of cedar and we'd learn how to process them because it's important in our culture. We were also interested in weaving wool, and so mountain goat wool was how we used to get wool because we didn't have like European sheeps. So we would use mountain goat wool, and that would get stuck on like a shrub or a tree, like a fir tree, and people would go and like gather small tufts of them and then put it into like a mohoi, like a basket or a bag, and then they would keep it and then give it to the weavers, and they would spin it and card it and clean it and then weave these beautiful blankets. I might have that in the wrong order. So my dad was learning how to do the weaving of wool with Uncle Bill when they were doing cedar weaving and wool weaving at the same time, like intermixed. And then they stopped because my dad was leaving all the time. But we're trying to relearn how to spin, or we're trying to learn for the first time how to spin, my dad and I. Other medicines that I personally like. Okay, I like nettles. I said that before, but tuk tuk. I use it for, you could drink it, just like Labrador tea, put it in water, pour hot water over it, and then drink it. But the other thing that helps me, because I have really bad arthritis and scoliosis, so I have really bad nerve pain, and that's why native plants are so important to me, is because I know that they're medicines, and that's what I've been told since I was like a really little kid. Like, that pain as a child was just unbearable. We had to look for a lot of remedies, but native plants helped me. I started to whip myself with nettles, and it would take my pain away. Like, it would cause pain, and then like within the next week it would be gone, and like within the next year it felt like it was so much better. So thinking about how important it is for our people to heal themselves, like, there are plants that I've learned about that help reduce blood pressure, and they help you to have a stronger heart and a stronger bloodstream. And you think about like our people and how they're affected by heart disease and diabetes and suicide. Like, you think about what not having, this is something I've brought up a lot before, but I think food and our mental health are also really intertwined. Like, when our bodies aren't doing well, our minds aren't doing well. And when our bodies are doing well, our minds start to do better. And so that's why I think that it's so important. We learned about salmon berry sprouts and how much antioxidants those have for just reducing pain and inflammation. And I remember being fed those when I was a little kid in a stroller. The other plant that I'm interested in are camas, and those are complex carb, and it's a really small plant. And White Swan Environmental has the Spirit of the Shwala Stewardship Corps, and so one of our projects one year when I was like 16 or so was to go out to the San Juan Islands, and we did a camas digging and camas bake like week. And camas is a really complex carb that we replaced with potatoes, which is a simple carb. And other carbs that we have replaced camas with are like breads, and those turn into sugar extremely fast, but complex carbs, they like fuel your body for days and weeks. And people would bake them, you have to bake them for a really long time at a really high heat. So we would have natural ovens, and so creating that heat, wrapping them in other native plants like skunk cabbage and ferns and salal leaves, and then putting that pouch around the camas, putting it on top of the hot ashes, and then covering it with dirt. And then we used like a poker and like poked through and put water into it so it would like steam it, basically. Because you have to think, it was like, if we're thinking about indigenous like knowledge, we didn't have ovens, we didn't have propane, we didn't have that stuff, we had fire. And so this is how our people would use fire and use our resources to make these foods edible for us. You had to keep putting ashes on them for days, hours, and then like all 24 hours. And then I think we had the fire going for like 2 or 3 days and just kept putting ashes on top, and then we were able to like eat them. And the old people would mash them into like little patties, and then we would preserve them all winter. So that was a real treat to try that. And that's kind of like what our people would do. That was our indigenous science, that was native science. The other things that I'm interested in, well, I kind of mentioned like everything that I'm interested in, but my grandmother was really interested in like preserving. My grandmother was in Lummi Elder Speaks, and she preserved apples and like all sorts of fruits from orchards. And that's something that I'm interested in, but I don't really personally identify orchards or trees like that. Not something that I'm used to, but a lot of the elders that I know and people that grew up on this territory, they really put a lot of focus on the orchards and how important orchards were. So that's something that I would like to learn more about. And then willow is the last one that I'm interested in, because willow was used to create our reef net. So we would use, like, nettle is really good for inflammation, but you could also use it as a fiber. So we had these, like, technology or techniques to spin wool and to spin cedar, because you could use it to make rope, but you could also use those fibers of the nettle and make nettle rope, or you could use the fibers of the willow and make willow rope. And so these all had different, like, flexibilities, and they had different strengths. And so nettle and willow are really strong, and that's what we would use to create our reef net. So nettle is how we would create our net, and then the willow ring obviously was made out of willow. And I can't wait to hear what my dad has to say about, like, native plants, because, you know, he knows about different woods and things like that. But I think our whole ecosystem is just an interconnected place, and, like, our people are interconnected with this place. Like I mentioned, it's really important for our microclimates to stay biodiverse so that they can maintain that sort of health. But then for us to be connected to those areas and also be connected to the health of the land and, like, fuel ourselves. Because, like I mentioned, native plants have really helped me. And I know that when I learned about them, I was trying to use them to help other people. But for me, like, learning about native plants was my saving grace. Like, it was my lifesaver and really helped me to prevent a lot of pain that, like, Western science couldn't do. I was going to the hospital multiple times a week for years, and there was no diagnosis, there was no solution. I was just meant to deal with chronic pain from, like, a really young age, and I just don't think that we should be destined to live like that. I think our youth deserve better. I deserve better, you know? Like, our ancestors had a good way of life and a good healthy life, and it's our responsibility to, like, look backwards and try to walk forwards in a good way.
Thank you for sharing that with us, and your powerful testimony to native plants, and, you know, what was really gifted to you from the plant relative. They, in a way, they seen you suffering, and for whatever reasons of their own, you know, the plant relatives decided that they would take that from you. And no discrediting to your research and your work as well, but I think your, like, your belief in those medicines potentially helped even more, helped you heal or even more. And now you're, like, an avid snowboarder, like, you're like you do all of these, like, amazing things. Like, you would have never guessed from an outside perspective looking in that is something that you had to deal with, and maybe you still deal with throughout your lifetime a little bit, but, like, you've definitely found a space where, or it looks like you've found the right remedies. So
there's always more to learn, so I'm not, like, healed, and I think that, like, medicines are not something to overdo or to, you know, like, there's a balance, and you shouldn't live without it, but you shouldn't have it all the time in high quantities in any way whatsoever. It's just, like, you have to be really cautious. And we had, that was another thing. Okay, so I got two more stories, but the first one was from my grandma Sasayatha from the second native plants interest group. And she always used to say this all the time, but she'd always say, tell the plants thank you. And she's so sweet. And she has this, like, high-pitched elder's voice. And she goes, Haishka, Haishka, Haishka. And then you look at the next plant, and then you say, Haishka, Haishka, Haishka. And so you do that, and if you're asking them to, like, give themselves to you, you know, you, like, say thank you, but then also, like, you say, I'm only going to take as much as I need, and I'm going to use it for a good purpose. I'm not going to let any of this go to waste. And if the plant agrees, she used to say, she said this in the podcast, in the Native Plant Interest Group, but she said they would dance for you and they would like bounce. And so in that like way, we're communicating and it's a reciprocal act where you're asking for permission and the plant gives you permission. It's not like we're just taking it all. And you do that with any plant that you harvest. You should do that with any plant you harvest and have that relationship of like gratitude, but also like respect and reciprocity where you're asking for permission and gifted permission. And she is so sweet. And just to go back to the topic about like portions, I was in the Lummi Cultural Commission for a little while. No, not the Cultural Commission. I was on the Lummi Cultural Department team under my language teacher, Smakia, to learn the language. And he let me learn about plants and things like that. But I was also mentored by my uncle, Al Scott Johnny. And he talked about how there was like, there's a 5-step system that we would do after winter to flush all of our bodies of leftover things that have just been stuck with us during like our stagnant periods in the winter, like when you're not moving around and eating so much and drinking so much fluids, and things kind of just stay with you while you're in this like quiet winter period. And we would have 5 plants that you can get here still to this day. And they all have names. And so you would use those plants and put like 1 finger's knuckle deep into the plant. And that's how much you take. So if you're, you know, maybe a larger person, you need more plants. Like I have really long fingers. I must need a lot of medicine. But some people have really short fingers and they only need a little bit. And we had various forms of measurements, even like personal forms of measurement to make sure that we're not getting too much or too little. All medicines are like personal to your body, like what you might need might not be what somebody else needs. But it's good for us to carry it forward and keep learning it and come together as like one big puzzle. Like we're all just one puzzle piece and carry a little bit of information. We don't make the whole picture as one person. I'm just happy to support you and like support the community to learn and become more interested in native plants and the importance of it, because our elders, they taught us that food is medicine and water is life. We are the voices for our relatives who cannot speak, our relatives from the land, our relatives from the water, our relatives from the deep, our relatives in the sky, all of our relations. So it's really important for us to use our voices and advocate to protect our future generations.
Well, thank you again, Sadie Olson, Kwasomat, for joining us today on the Plants podcast series. We appreciate everything that you do in your life and in the name of plants.
I appreciate you doing this work. It's great work, HJ. And thank you to my elders, my Sila, my grandparents, and my Salalukla, my extended relatives, and my Sesalalukla, my extended relatives' relatives, for helping me learn this information and carrying the history of our land and our language forward for our people, because we wouldn't be here without any of them. And I'm grateful for this ecosystem and environment for being so fruitful, and so many people have so much respect and appreciation for this place and like this territory. And we come from strong people, we come from strong medicine, we come from strong like territory, and it's still seen and appreciated today, whether or not majority of the population addresses them in that way, as all species being our relatives, but they're appreciated regardless.
Do you have anything that you would like to share with young and indigenous youth?
Find a native plant you like and do like a research project about what your family did with that plant or what you would like to do in the future with that plant. And there's so many different uses for plants, whether they're like dyes for wool or, you know, for medicines or for tools, and all of the different ways that we can use plants are just so cool. So I really encourage you guys to learn and just be grateful to the plants and listen. I might not be the elder who said it, but she said it to me, and I would like to pass that forward. And that's a practice that she carried forward with her through so much in her life, and she obviously carried it forward for a reason. So never forget who you are and where you come from.
Hey, what up, y'all? Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Plant Series. This episode has been produced by Roy Alexander, Free Borsi, Cyrus James, and Ellie Smith. Original soundtrack by Roy Alexander, Mark Nichols, and Free Borsi. Huge thank you to our funders, the Anatai Foundation, the Cultural Survival Fellowship, the Paul Allen Foundation, and the Whatcom Community Foundation. Young and Indigenous is a part of Children of the Setting Sun Productions. We are an Indigenous nonprofit set in the homelands of the Lummi and Nooksack people. Hi, Chica, for listening. Later, y'all.